This is the Creative Agency Podcast,
where we explore the strategies,
aspirations, methods, and mistakes
behind growing and maintaining
a successful
creative agency.
Hello and welcome to another thrill-seeking, danger-defying, adrenaline-fueled episode of the Creative Agency Podcast. Today, Kyle Racky of Proposify will be joining us to talk about growing an in-house software product while running a digital agency. I'm sure you've heard a success story or two of an agency owner who was able to build an amazing product in-house and then went on to claim untold riches and fame. After all, it's only natural, after building and marketing products for clients year after year, that some agencies decide to build and market their own product. But the journey is not for the faint of heart, and many fail along the way. Kyle offers great insight into how he built Proposify, a software designed to help agencies manage proposals, while simultaneously running his former agency Headspace. Now, as you might already know, we use Proposify at Murmur Creative, and we love it. Kyle was nice enough to share a special offer for listeners of the Creative Agency Podcast, 2 free months of Proposify. Woot. We'll be revealing the secret code you need to get those 2 free months at the end of the show, so stay tuned. Now let's get to that interview. Hello out there. I've got Kyle Racky on the phone, co-founder and CEO of Proposify. You're in Halifax, Halifax, Nova Scotia, correct?
Yes, we are. The last one. It's way out there. A lot of people, especially in the States, are like, where? What is that? You probably could have kept calling it Nova Scotia and nobody would know the difference.
Yeah, exactly. So in today's podcast, we're going to talk about building a software as a service product as an agency. Many agencies go down this route. Some succeed and some fail. Proposify is an example of a product that you built while running your former agency Headspace. But before we get into that, I'd like to talk a little bit about what Proposify is. We use Proposify at Murmur Creative and we love it. We actually tried out a bunch of your competitors before settling on Proposify. And so it wasn't a decision we took lightly. Can you briefly explain what Proposify is and what it does?
Sure. So we created Proposify to basically replace the current process that a lot of agencies have, which is using tools like InDesign, Word, Google Docs, to put together proposals that they want to be very kind of, you know, robust presentation kind of proposals, not just simple quotes or estimates. So the problem that currently exists that a lot of agencies do is they're kind of fumbling around with content where, you know, where was this old section on branding that we wrote 6 months ago? So we offer a way for you to completely write and design your, beautiful proposal template all in the browser, no external software needed. And then you and your team all have access to the content library. So you can share content, you can reuse case studies, you can kind of drag and drop and put together a proposal really fast. So saving a lot of time. And then also you can send it to your client through the system so that you can know when your client opened it and what sections they looked at and where they spent the most time. So it can kind of help you refine and figure out what's working and what's not in your proposals. And the great thing is your client can sign off there right in the browser without, needing to print and, scan their signature or anything like that. So we kind of just put together the whole process of proposals and sales and make it a lot faster and easier and help people close deals faster.
Yeah, it saved us so much time at Murmur Creative. It was taking us hours to put together proposals, but it's gotten exponentially easier since we started using Proposify.
Oh, that's great to hear. I'm glad for that.
So you started an agency called Headspace in 2008, and then you sold it in 2014 to focus on Proposify. How did Headspace come to be?
So actually, Headspace was my old freelance moniker. I was kind of trained in design. I went to design school like right after high school. So I was really young starting out kind of in the industry. I think I was 19 when I started working at an agency as a designer. You know, that was sort of my thing, was graphic design or, you know, later kind of web design. And I got kind of sick of working for other agencies and decided to just go off on my own and freelance. This would have been 2008 when I quit my full-time job. And this was sort of my first business, was being a freelance web designer, developer. And then I kind of got lonely after a year. So I missed working with the team. And there was a lot of parts of the business that I was still really learning. I was only about 24 when I was doing that. So I invited Kevin. Kevin Springer is my business partner. We're still working together to this day on Proposify, but he was a sales person, business development person at the agency that we worked at. And I invited him to come start Headspace and help me kind of grow it and bring on bigger and better clients. And so that's when we kind of kicked it off, was around late 2008.
That's cool. That's cool that you started so young and were successful.
Well, successful's open to interpretation, but I made a lot of fails along the way. But yes, I mean, overall, I'm glad that I did it. I would do it all over again.
What was something that when you first starting out Headspace that was like sort of a hard lesson to learn?
There's a lot. Like there was a lot of lessons around sales that I hadn't learned because I didn't. I was always very shy around the sales side of it. I kind of thought of myself as like. Kevin and I used to sort of phrase it as, Kevin, you go out and you go fishing. You bring home the fish and I'll cook it. So like Kevin would go find the clients, and Kevin's this really, you know, outgoing kind of extroverted guy. And so he's really great at striking up conversations and bringing in leads. And I was kind of better at just working with the client on their actual project. So there's tons of lessons around sales. I mean, cash flow, for instance, our first year we did really well and we thought it was just going to like, we were just going to hit the hockey stick forever. So we didn't save a lot of cash for a rainy day. We spent it or we hired people and we grew really aggressively. But then, you know, the next year was a lot leaner. So we had to cut back and we dealt with a lot of like debt and banks and just cash flow issues for a long time. So I would do that differently over for sure.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's the business side, you know, we kind of come into the creative agency being like, oh, we know how to do all this. And then, oh yeah, we got to figure all this other stuff out. That's not creative.
Well, I think especially with designers and maybe developers to some degree, they start these agencies because they just want to choose their own clients and they want to kind of do things their way. But then they have to learn the business stuff as they go. And so naturally you just make a lot of mistakes that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we've made our fair share.
I think everybody does.
So what was Headspace sort of unique selling position once you sort of developed that? Like what set you apart from other agencies?
I think that was one of our big problems was we didn't have very much of a differentiator. I think early on and looking back now in 2008, 2009, web design was still, it was still kind of lumped in with a lot of agency services. So like the bigger traditional agencies, well, the ones we called traditional that offered, you know, a lot of branding and advertising, they kind of lumped websites in like one of, you know, we do brochures, we do billboards, we do websites. And I think for our area in Halifax, we were maybe one of the first agencies to really focus on the web side of it, to be like, no, it's not just like you don't just tack it in your list of collaterals like a brochure. Like there's a lot more to building an effective website. So I think that was probably a reason for maybe some early success in getting clients on was because people like the idea of really working with a specialist. But then naturally, you know, everybody started specializing in web design and it became more of a general type of service. So I think we had to keep reinventing ourselves as we went. Eventually, we became very focused on user experience and talked a lot about UX. But I think that was probably one of the biggest mistakes we made was not focusing on kind of like a very specific industry vertical or saying like, we own, you know, UX for this type of business. We were still very general and it became harder to compete, especially in our small local area where there's just not a massive pool of clients.
Well, I mean, in a sense that might not have been that bad of an idea that you didn't focus on a vertical as far as your clients go, if it was a small pool to choose from.
I mean, it's hard to say, you know, whether that would have worked or not. But I think that if we had focused on a vertical market, we wouldn't have been limited to the local Halifax area. I think we actually would have been able to sell, you know, let's say that we focused on healthcare, for example, and which was actually kind of a late idea that we had when we were sort of on the fence about whether or not we were going to continue with Headspace. I think that if we had have done it right and really owned the healthcare or the, you know, the medical kind of industry for doing user experience and web design and marketing, I think that would have actually opened us up to a bigger pool, at least in North America, because I think most companies, unless they're hiring a specialist, they're kind of just going to stick with a local company unless they have a reason to. But that's a whole
thing. That makes sense too. And I know that we've sort of gone back and forth with we have one main vertical that we work with, which is kind of food and food industry clients. And then we also like work with lots of real estate and lawyers. So we haven't quite decided what vertical is our specialty, but.
And I think you have to do that to some degree, right? Like just because you specialize in a certain industry doesn't mean you won't work with other companies, but it just means you have a target when you go at marketing and selling. You're not just blasting, the shotgun blast to the world. It's like with us, right? We focus mainly on the digital agency market for our product, but we still have roofers who use it.
Yeah. I was actually wondering about that, like how many non sort of creative services use Proposify.
It's been a little while since I looked at the data, but I if I had a guess, I would place it somewhere around maybe 10% of our user base are not, wouldn't really fit into the web design, marketing, PR, digital kind of agency space. They would be more like office equipment leasing or roofing, or we have a pool and spa company out of New York that uses us. So it's pretty broad.
It's a versatile tool. So I'm not too surprised. So maybe let's talk a little bit about running Headspace and starting to build a product. How did you sort of manage both those things at the same time?
This is the part that I think every agency in the world that tries to build a product, I think, they all fall down in the same way. And we did that as well. So Proposify was actually an idea that I had come up with maybe before I even started freelancing, way back in 2007, 2008. And it was just sort of one night maybe I was drunk or something. I was in my basement and just thinking about like, hey, that'd be kind of cool if there was like a base camp for proposals, because I'd worked on them. And, so I sort of put together these wireframes and I didn't expect to build it. I was just like, hey, it's kind of cool to think of an idea and just sort of sketch it out and do up some UI mockups just to kind of imagine what it could look like. And then I kind of shelved it. And then, Kevin and I started Headspace and started trying to build our client base and hire employees. So it was very much on the back burner. I wasn't even thinking about it. Then as we started to deal with these cash flow issues of, the nature of service work can be very feast or famine. We thought about how wouldn't it be really nice if we just had like a product and people could use it and just pay us every month and we didn't have to like go collect invoices from clients and deal with like, where's this project at in the budget, or are we done? Can we invoice the final amount? Like, we were just really sick of that whole, very challenging part of running a service agency. So we started experimenting with different product ideas, and we thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was like a social media analysis tool that was like, Radian 6, but simpler. And we did that. It was called Social Gopher, and we actually built it. We were maniacs. We were building like three products at once because we were just like, let's try this. And we didn't realize the level of commitment and focus that it takes to really build a product and release it and grow it properly. That's another huge mistake that we made, is we didn't focus on one product. We focused on two or three, and two of them failed. And Proposify was also heavily delayed because of that very split focus. So we kind of just tinkered with it. The big problem that agency owners have with building a product is that you can't bill for the time that your developers spend on the product.
Right.
So naturally, you're going to be like, okay, we just got a big client and they have a ton of work and they're paying us really handsomely for it. Johnny, stop working on our internal product and work on this, because we can't, the clients come first.
Yeah.
So without that dedicated focus, your developer goes and he or she works on it like on a Friday afternoon when there's a little bit of downtime, and then doesn't touch it again for another week or two. And it'll never get off the ground with that lack of focus.
Yeah. It sounds like when us trying to work on our own website.
Yeah. Agencies are usually, you guys have a really nice website.
Thank you.
But yeah, traditionally like agencies are, very slow to kind of release their own internal branding or marketing stuff, just because, the clients come first, right? Cobbler's kids.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I guess to kind of continue, like, how did we get to where we're at now? let me back up. So we heard about – this would have been about 2011 or so. We heard about this local event going on that was called Demo Camp, where people who were building like SaaS products or just, you know, digital products could stand up in front of an audience at the university and like spend 5 minutes demoing their early stage product. And then later people could kind of come up to you and talk about it. So I volunteered for this, even though we really didn't have the product, you know, very far along at all. Like it was kind of just an ugly, like I say that we built it with duct tape and bubble gum. You know, it was just, it was more of a prototype than it was a real product, and we didn't have customers or anything. But when I presented the product, I got a huge response from it. People coming up to me like, oh, I write tons of proposals. I could use this tool. And I'm like, not yet. It's not a, it doesn't really work yet. But it gave us sort of that shot in the arm, that boost of confidence we needed to be like, hey, you know, maybe there is something here. We should keep working on this. Whereas a lot of our other products we put out there and it was like tumbleweeds. You know, nobody was interested because we didn't do a lot of upfront customer development or anything that would help us with what are we building? Does anybody actually need it? Will they pay for it? So once we had that confidence that, okay, Proposify, or it wasn't called that at the time. It was called Pitch Perfect, and then the movie came out and we changed the name. But Proposify, as it is now, we knew we needed to build it, but we kind of were still at that standstill of like, our developers are busy. The company actually isn't doing very well. Like we're always just on the very brink of can we make cash flow or can we make payroll this week? So then kind of like our an angel came along in the form of the federal government. It was actually the Atlantic Canada Opportunities Agency. So they're based in Canada here where we live. There's these different agencies that are federally run, and they have a lot of grant programs and interest-free loans and all these kind of really nice funding options. So we were in the good position of building a product that was very much in line with the kind of things that they fund. And they said, you know, hey, you guys are building a product. That's great. You know, we've got this grant program where if you need like a specialized skill set, we'll cover this person's salary for an entire year.
Whoa.
And we were like, hell yeah. So we went in and we found this awesome JavaScript full stack developer who was also kind of getting sick of working on agency like service stuff. He kind of wanted to like own one product and not be split around to different client work. And his name is Jonathan. He's our CTO to this day. And so we just said, hey, you know, we basically could cover your salary for a year with this grant program. And that was what we needed, of like very dedicated focus of him. Just him and I really working together, you know, for a lot of time, for almost a year, of just getting the very early beta MVP out, collecting customer feedback, improving the product, and just iterating until we got something that people would actually like and pay for.
That's cool. Yeah, I know there's an agency, I won't name names, but an agency here in town that tried to build a product that almost put the agency under completely. And I know that there is some danger in sort of diverting resources to a large project, but it seems like you sort of did it in a somewhat smart way and getting the grant and sort of splitting resources between the agency and the product.
I think that the big problem is that agencies, which is what we did, initially, you think that building the product is going to be building a product. And then, okay, so we're going to put, you kind of underestimate the time that it takes, because you're like, if we were pricing this for a client in terms of hours, this is how long it should take to get the first version out the door. But people don't realize that that first version that you're putting out the door is not the product. That's, you know, you could be a year or more away from actually having something people are like, oh, that's awesome, I'm paying to use that. Really, takes a lot longer than that to find product market fit.
So you hired this JavaScript developer who's now your CTO. And how long was it before Proposify was presented to the public after that?
We hired him in January 2013. And he and I worked together for 4 months on getting our MVP, you know, our minimal viable product out the door. So it took till April till we launched. And launching it was pretty disheartening because, again, like I mentioned a second ago, you always think that, okay, we worked really hard on this. We worked for 4 months, we're getting it out, and we expect we'll get like some customers and some people going, hey, this is great. And most people, A, didn't care. They were just like, oh, what's the big deal? I'm using InDesign, it's fine. Or they were like, oh, this is, you know, terrible. Or some people were like, oh, it's kind of a cool idea, but they didn't use it. So it was a little bit like a fart in the windstorm, you know, it didn't make a big impact. So then that was where the real work began. And so from about April 2013, and we spent a good year, it wasn't until May of 2014 that Kevin and I had fully left Headspace. We raised a small seed round of funding for Proposify, and then we still didn't really hit product market fit until about September of 2014. That's when really things started, you know, snowballing. But it was a good year and a half of just put something out there, get feedback, figure out what's not working, redesign parts of the app, rewrite the code from scratch. That's the hard time. And most people just don't have the patience or the interest to keep on iterating on the product.
Yeah, I was wondering, did you ever sort of come to a point where you're like, should we just stop and keep on growing Headspace?
Oh, there was lots of times that I thought it. I kind of thought like, this isn't going anywhere. It's like been a year and we still only have, what, 5-10 paying customers. It's never going to happen. And that's where, you know, Kevin and I kept each other going for a large part. You know, when one of us was down or depressed, the other one would sort of be like, no, this is going somewhere. And also we had, you know, we had Jonathan with us who we felt, I don't know, I felt like I kind of owed it to him to see it through, to not just give up and say, okay, go work somewhere else.
Yeah. So at what point did you sort of you're like, okay, this is real. Like, we're going to sell Headspace and take the leap.
We had actually wanted to sell Headspace for quite a long time before that. We had even entertained offers and flew out and met with some potential acquirers back as early as like 2011, 2012. Unfortunately, there just wasn't a lot to buy because as we know, you know, unless the agency has some sort of IP or there's something really tangible that somebody can acquire, there's not really a good reason. Your assets walk out the door every day at 6 o'clock. There's not a lot to buy. So it was very difficult. But I think when we knew we wanted to sell the agency was when we just realized that we had to like shit or get off the pot. We couldn't split our focus between trying to build a software startup and build a really successful digital agency at the same time. We had to do one or the other. And so then eventually Kevin and I just kind of figured, let's start the process of getting Headspace sort of in somebody else's hands or getting us out of it, you know, is really like summer of 2014. But it took probably about 9-10 months from starting to talk to purchasers to actually like being fully out of it.
How many employees did Headspace have when you sold it?
I think at our largest we were 12, but I think around the time that it sold, it was maybe only around 6-7, less than 10 for sure.
Well, I mean, I imagine that anyone who would buy an agency with that few people would be scared that everyone would just quit.
It's a risk for sure. And we were scared of it too. And that was why really probably the smarter financial move around that time that we were really struggling would have been to just lay off everybody and just, you know, file chapter 7 or whatever it is. But we were really propping it up because we didn't want to go that route. Like we wanted to leave it gracefully and not just shut it down. So we kind of really struggled that year to keep the lights on, keep people paid. Sometimes we missed payroll by a few days, and we had to tell our employees like, look, we're not doing well. We're trying to find a buyer. And thankfully people stuck with us for that time during that really, really tough time.
So you let your employees know that you were selling?
Yeah, we didn't at first. It was sort of like, let's sort of go down the road with some people and see who bites or who's interested. But I think once we figured we found the right buyer, that's when we kind of let people know.
And they stuck with you. That's great.
They did. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it wasn't the smoothest transition for sure, because the person who, you know, so there were these two buyers, and I guess I don't know how transparent I can be without getting a letter from one of their lawyers, but right. there was two potential purchasers. One of them was kind of the more of an old school mentality, you know, ran a fairly old school distribution business, so didn't know anything about marketing, but kind of wanted to buy a marketing company because of that reason. And then the other one was a little bit more marketing savvy, but didn't have like the financial resources of the others. So the two of them were going to work together on it and buy it. But then we ran into issues with the bank where, you know, the bank sort of had a hold on our assets because of money we owed them. So they wouldn't kind of let us sell it. It was a really weird, very frustrating time between lawyers and banks. But eventually one of the purchasers just kind of, you know, backed out and said, look, this is too complicated. I'm out. And the other one thankfully kind of stepped up to keep continuing down the road with us. But then even after he signed the purchase and sale agreement, he tried to back out a couple months later. And somebody else came in who he knew, who kind of kept it and ran with it. And that's the guy who's running it today. So it was absolute hell. It was the most dreadful, one of the most dreadful experiences I've ever been through.
Oh my God. That doesn't sound like any fun.
We can laugh about it now. It's done.
So after that, you're finally able to focus on Proposify. And like, how many customers did you have at that point?
So when we were finally out of Headspace and we had raised a seed round of funding through this group called InnovaCore, they're kind of provincially like a early stage venture capital firm here in Halifax. We raised $250,000 with them. And then Akoa, who had given us the grant previously, had matched it with an interest-free loan. So we basically had $500,000 at our disposal, which I guess sounds like a lot, but it's really in the startup world, it's a pretty small amount.
Yeah.
And we kind of knew like, okay, I mean, it was a great breath of fresh air to be able to be like, okay, we've got some money. We don't have to be stressed about paying bills. You know, we're kind of out of Headspace. We have the focus to just work on the product. But at the back of our minds, we kind of knew like, okay, we still only have like 10 customers. So if this doesn't take off within a year, we're going to be out of money and, you know, have to be looking elsewhere. So we hired another developer. We really doubled down a lot on during that summer on getting to product market fit. And, you know, around September, we kind of noticed that we had doubled our user base, and it still wasn't very much, but it was 20 or something like that. By the end of the year, we were somewhere around a couple hundred clients or customers. So there was a huge kind of spike in traction that we were noticing. We kind of, I guess, verified that we had hit product market fit by sending out our customers in email. And for those who haven't heard of Sean Ellis, he sort of pioneered this, the concept of growth hacking. He said, you know, if you want to find it, if you're at product market fit, is ask your customers and say, how would you feel if you could no longer use our product? Would you be very disappointed, somewhat, not very much, or don't, you know, not applicable? And if you get more than 40% of your customers saying, I would be very disappointed if I could no longer use Proposify, then you kind of know that you're at product market fit and you can start scaling as opposed to just trying to find the product still. And so we sent that out, and I think we had 50 or 60% of them like basically saying, I'm going to go to your office and like kill you all if you take this site down, which was a little alarming. So we were like pretty happy about that we were like, okay, we're finally at this, you know, mystical, unattainable product market fit, and we can start scaling. And now we just celebrated our 2000th customer, and we are at $1 million in annual recurring revenue. And so that was in about a year it took to reach that.
That's great. That's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you.
So when you say start scaling, did you do any sort of marketing to sort of support to bring in those new clients?
Yeah, we started marketing very early on, like even before the product had been released. And we just kept continually, especially content marketing, blogging and mm-hmm. doing influencer outreach. So, you know, producing content has been just a continual, you know, sort of like breathing. We just have always done it. And some of it's worked really well and some of it hasn't. But I've just always felt that it's very important to produce content and kind of figure out what works and what doesn't and what resonates with your audience.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that I discovered Proposify was because I started listening to your guys' podcast, the Agencies Drinking Beer podcast, which is awesome, and everyone should check it out. That seemed kind of a genius way to me for you to reach out to your exact audience.
Yes, yeah. The way that kind of came about was I was writing the blog at the time because there was only a couple of us. So I was sort of content duty. I was writing the blog about agency stuff, you know, and because it had been a little while since I actually was involved in an agency, I kind of felt like the well was running dry on ideas and, you know, are people going to really respect this advice considering I don't actually run one anymore? So we thought, well, wouldn't it be better to actually interview people who are still in the trenches every day running an agency and kind of get their thoughts and opinions on what they're doing and what's working. So we started kind of a little bit ripping off Jerry Seinfeld's show, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and kind of took that concept and said, well, what if it was just agencies in offices drinking beer? And it was actually a video series. You can still see some of those videos today. They're on Vimeo or YouTube. But we took some local agency owners and actually hired a videographer who, you know, a friend of ours, so he gave us a good deal. But he would shoot the video of me interviewing them and we're drinking and all that kind of stuff. And people seemed to like it. We got a lot of positive feedback from it, but the hard part was like, how do we do this, you know, every week? We can't like go do a video shoot or even find an agency owner who lives locally,
right?
You know, that pool's going to run dry pretty soon. So then eventually it just settled on, let's do a podcast. We can do one every week and we're not limited to just local people.
That's cool. Yeah. When I was researching, sort of coming up with this podcast, and I was like, who else is out there trying to, you know, doing agency podcasts? There's only a small number of other sort of agency related podcasts, and your guys's was one of them.
Yeah. I find a lot of them have, like one of my favorite podcasts of all time is the Boag World with Paul Boag. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of that one, but, he's British, you know, him and his business partner. It's a very British podcast. Like I think they're based like somewhere south of London, but I've always liked the content because they run this agency called Headscape, which I did not steal or try to rip off the name. They're just called Headscape. And so, but it had a very like web design development focus. It's all about kind of a little bit more talking to web professionals. And I think what we wanted to do differently, considering our software is very sales focused, is let's not talk as much about like what are the latest CSS tricks,
right,
or it's anything very tactical, but let's talk about how do you actually build an agency and what's the sales process like and how do you, I don't know, make the operations run more smoothly. And I think that's what kind of the agency owners tend to be more interested in.
Definitely. Definitely. The reason that we started this podcast was because we don't have, at Murmur, we have 11 people now, but we don't have anyone with real agency experience. We've just sort of grown organically and we sort of keep on coming to this point where we're like, what do other agencies do? How do they handle this issue? What software do they use for their proposals? You know?
Mm.
And so, yeah, this podcast is both a learning tool for us, and then we figured it would also be useful for other agencies with similar questions.
And I'd like to hear, because you're in Portland, Oregon, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had always found that in Halifax, at least, a lot of the agencies that were kind of a similar size and sort of competed with each other, they kept their cards very close to their chest.
Yeah.
Like, you might see each other at an event. Hey, how's business? Good. Awesome. How's the wife and kids or whatever? But people don't really want to talk about their business strategies or how they're acquiring customers,
mm-hmm,
because they're like, that's my competition. And I think if anything really positive has come out of the podcast, I think that the people who are brave enough to go on the show and really share that stuff with the world, I mean, kudos to them. They're shedding light on what they're doing and how it's working out and what mistakes they've made. And that transparency, I think other agency owners are drawn to.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've had a couple of agency owners. Our first one, the first interview we did, actually, one of her coworkers, the people who worked for her, were saying, are you sure this is a podcast and they're just not trying to get all of our secrets?
Yeah. Oh, and actually along those lines, when we were running Headspace and launching Proposify, the first idea was like get all the local agencies kind of on it using it because we knew them. They knew who we were. Mm-hmm. And most of them wouldn't use it because they're like, I'm not giving you my proposal content. You're going to look in my account and steal all my pricing or whatever.
Oh, right.
So they really didn't trust us.
That makes sense, I suppose. Could be useful data.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah. Yeah, we could have came up with the ultimate proposal, just steal all our competitors.
So what's next for Proposify and for you? Are you going to continue to develop projects or other software as a service products, or is Proposify sort of your focus now?
It's like I spent so many years coming up with product ideas and wireframing them and kind of trying them to get people using it that there's a part of me that misses it because we're in a very different place with the business now than we were a year or two ago, which is going from just trying to build something that people like and use to scaling it as a business and really, I guess the activities of a co-founder or a CEO really change a lot from the early days when you're wearing a lot of hats and doing everything to now how do we grow the business? How do we grow the team? And how do I start delegating tasks, getting people who are smarter than me at different things to do it as opposed to me trying to do everything myself. So I'm enjoying the experience right now. It's a great position to be in. I'm happy to do that for the next several years. Mm-hmm. But there's a part of me that sort of itches to like build something on the side and just kind of go off and quietly try another product idea just to see what works, just so I don't lose my chops.
Yeah.
But you never know what the future holds.
For sure. For sure. That's great. So I usually ask everyone at the end of the show to provide three takeaways, basically things that you would tell like another agency owner, in this case, an agency owner who would be trying to develop a SaaS product. Like what advice would you give sort of given your experience?
I would say, bear with me. I've covered some of this on an old, a blog post that I had written about how to basically build your own products. Mm-hmm. And we can maybe send a link for people who are interested in looking at that.
Definitely.
But I think the number one takeaway would be focus, because it's very difficult to focus on the product for the reasons that I had mentioned before. So you have to find some way to get like a dedicated developer. However you can do that. If your agency's profitable enough, then see if you can fund it. Can you raise money? Can you build as a separate company and hire a technical co-founder? Whatever option you have, try that. Because if you're just trying to get your developer in-house to work on it for a few hours a week, you'll never launch anything.
Gotcha.
The second point I would say, if you're trying to build an internal product, would be to spend more time than you think is necessary on product validation and customer development. I don't think enough people do this. I know we didn't do it enough early on. Was often you'll go, hey, there's a cool idea, or this should be an app, or you know, here's a problem I have. I'm going to go build a solution for it. And I think that you should spend a lot of time getting out and talking to people who you kind of consider your market to be, and ask, not just showing them your product idea and saying, hey, what do you think? But really trying to pull information out of them about how they think, how they currently solve the problem. Is it a big enough problem that they would pay for a solution? So not just kind of just sketch up something on a napkin and then say, okay, now let's spend all of our money and time and resources building this. Too often you come out of it in the end with a product nobody wants and you've wasted a lot of time and money.
Right.
So that's the second thing. So we talked about hiring a dedicated team. The other thing that I would say is a third takeaway is to release something. Once you kind of have that validation and you say, okay, people really want this, there's a great, you know, sort of hole in the market that we can fill with this product and people are going to buy it, is get something out there very quickly and don't spend a lot of time trying to perfect it, because you could spend like 4 months like we did just getting something kind of shitty out the door, or you could spend 2 years coming up with the ultimate product and saying we can't launch it until it's awesome.
Right.
But you might end up with the same product in the end anyway, because no matter what you launch, people are going to not like it. They're going to say it's missing a feature. There's going to be something that you haven't thought of until you get it in people's hands and can start talking to them and figuring out how to iterate on it. that's what you need to do. And I've seen examples of people who have literally spent years on a product idea and not launched anything because they're perfectionists, and it'll never go anywhere.
Yeah.
So launch something quick and iterate fast.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me on the Creative Agency Podcast. And everyone who's listening should also go and check out the agency's Drinking Beer Podcast. Also, you said if people wanted to try out Proposify, they could type in a code for Murmur. Is that correct?
Yes. So when you sign up to a free trial, 30-day trial, you get 30 days free with it. But then when you want to upgrade and you're putting in your billing info, there's a promo code or a coupon code, and you just enter Murmur, so M-U-R-M-U-R, all lowercase, and that will get you an additional 2 months for free.
An additional 2 months. You heard it here first. That's great. Thanks so much. And it was awesome talking to you. Thanks for talking about building a product from your agency and sharing your story.
Yeah, anytime. And thank you very much for having me on.
You bet.
You've been listening to the Creative Agency Podcast with your host, Chris Bolton, who, when he's not podcasting or being a dad, he's the Digital Strategy Director at Murmur Creative in Portland, Oregon. Be sure to visit us online at creativeagencypodcast.com.